I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I am a jail nurse. It's the best nursing job ever. So if anybody wants a job, see me. And we'll split the bonus, okay? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, my sobriety date is February. I'm so nervous I can't even think. February 19th, 1997. And this was my first home group. It was my first home group years and years and years ago. And then I switched jobs, and so it was hard for me to come to the Breakfast Club. But, God, it was my favorite, you know, meeting ever. And now I can't even get my butt up out of the house at this time. I was so nervous I was going to oversleep because I just bitched out a nurse the night before for being late because I wanted to go to a meeting at 7 o'clock. I wanted to be out of work and there. And then yesterday I slept in, and so I was late for her. I felt so embarrassed. So I got to start working my program a little bit better at work. Anyway, I grew up in Iowa. Iowa Hawkeyes. Anyway, I grew up in Iowa and with four brothers and parents. My parents are still married. They've been married like 72 years, something like that. They would still hold hands if they didn't have walkers and canes because they're very elderly now. But I guess I was about 10. We had a house fire, and so two of my brothers passed in that fire. And then a third brother who's fine now, but he got like third-degree burns. So we had this big, big tragedy when I was 10, and I don't know what it, you know, back in the 60s, you know, if you had something wrong with you, nobody talked about it, you know. It was just like, and especially when you grew up in a small town in Iowa, you know, and then you, what were the neighbors think? So, well, you know, when that happened, I think we all fell apart, but then we all kind of got together as a family. But I remember my mom was saying, oh, the teachers were so worried about you because something happened and you just changed. And I said, well, I was 10. I said, well, so what happened to me? How did I change? And she said, well, I really don't know. And I'm thinking, God, you know, in this day and age, we'd have our kids to a therapist or whatever. And I said, oh, okay. But I don't know what happened to me and how I just changed. I know, obviously, you have to change and, you know, the dynamics of your family going from, I was the second to the oldest. Now I'm the oldest. And then, I don't know, I had this feeling that I had to be the oldest and my brothers needed to listen to me, which they didn't. So, but anyway, so, you know, I grew up in like a, you know, a normal household. My parents had drinks, you know, but I always thought everybody else drank heavy, not just me. But when I got sober, I watched my family have a drink and, you know, they'll have a glass of wine and then put the rest of the wine away. And I'm like, I have never, ever, ever had a drink ever in my life. I don't even know what that means. So, I always, you know, portrayed everybody else had the problem and not me. Obviously, it was me. So, anyway, I went to nursing school. I went to a two-year program. And through my 20s, I got married, I think I was 23 or 22, something like that. But when through my 20s, I really didn't drink very often. But when I drank, I got drunk. I was a binge drinker all through my 20s. But once I put alcohol in my system, I had a hard time. Well, I didn't have a hard time. I couldn't stop. But I didn't know what that meant. I thought I just passed out or I just fell asleep, or I did not know. I heard all this stuff when I first came into AA, like that first drink gets you drunk and all these things, and I didn't understand what any of that meant. I didn't think I was that bad, but you know, when I look back to how I was when I came in here and how my brain, I wasn't processing stuff. You know, my brain was pretty sloshy up there, and I didn't really realize it until you get sober. And I used to say, oh, I'm a functioning alcoholic. Well, you know, I don't even know what the hell that is. Because when I look back to how I functioned, well, I might have got up in the morning, and I might have gotten to my work in the morning, and I might have got my kids fed, but that doesn't mean I was functioning. But in my head, I thought I was functioning, and everything was pretty cool, and I wasn't hurting anyone but me. And then that came to be a big fat lie I told myself. So in my early 30s, I decided I to get divorced from my kid's father. And it's funny, but it's not funny. Neither one of us drank or drugged at all in our marriage. I used to buy him like maybe a six pack of beer, and It was still in the refrigerator 2 weeks later. But he ended up dying from this disease, and then I ended up getting sober. So it was like, you know, it's funny. I think that's probably why we didn't get along, or we didn't even talk. We didn't. It wasn't about fighting. We just didn't talk because I think we were both dry drunks, and I didn't know, you know. He came from a very long, big, huge family, and 12 brothers and sisters, and I'm going to guess maybe 10 of them are in AA now. And, you know, so when that was my introduction to my first AA meeting when I was back in Des Moines visiting. They were going to a meeting, and his sister said, "Do you want to go?" And I thought, okay, you know, I mean, I wasn't thinking I was an alcoholic. I mean, you know, so, yeah, I'll go. But at the time, I was only drinking, like, you know, maybe once every 3 or 4 months. So I went to my first AA meeting, and I'm staring at everybody and seeing, you know, what do they look like? What does an alcoholic look like, you know? And I really remember enjoying the meeting. And I remember what things that were being said. I just remember thinking, wow, that's a group of really cool people. I like that. But, you know, I never ever thought I was an alcoholic. I would ask once in a while to my sister-in-law, "Do you think I drink too much?" And they only saw me like once a year. So, you know, so, and I would make it like, "Oh, this is how I party because I'm back in Iowa. I got to give them something to talk about for the next year," you know. But that's not how, that wasn't true. That's how I drank. And, but I just made it like it was like a once in a while, great once in a while thing. So, I guess in my early 30s, maybe 33, 34, alcohol really wasn't working too good for me. And I couldn't drink in the morning, for Christ's sakes. You know, then I would really be a drunk. So I started smoking pot. And everybody was like, "Ugh." But for me, that was like, "Oh," because I would never did that. I was like, I really kind of was a goody two-shoes. I didn't really drink in high school. I was kind of the designated driver. The very first time I ever drank, I stole a bottle of Cold Duck. I want to vomit. And that was like 50 years ago, and I still remember that. But when I stole it from my parents' house, and I just remember when I drank it, I drank the whole damn bottle. And I had, because I thought that's what you did. You know, I remember vomiting and it came out my nose and I'm like, "Oh." And that was it for me. I was done drinking until then when I turned 18, and way back then at 18 you could drink legally. And believe it or not, people laugh at me, especially the inmates, when I say, "Yeah, believe it or not, I was a basketball jock." And they'll look at me like, "Oh yeah, okay." But I really was. And, so I didn't drink because I was a jock. And, you know, my friends that were jocks drank, but I didn't. I really didn't. I was, like I said, the designated driver. They would take slow gin fizz, pour out half their Mountain Dew, pour that in there, and they would have a great time. And, you know, I would be just driving around this little town, you know, whatever. But when I turned 18, that was my thing. I was a barfly. I've always been a barfly when I drank. So at 18... I always said, "I'm going to bring my kids here and teach them how to drink." Now I drive by that little bar. Actually, I went into that little bar, I guess it's been about 5 years ago, because my parents still live in that little town. And we are meeting, it's right across the street from a racetrack. It's got sprint car races there. So I went in to meet, we were meeting my girlfriends. And then, you know, I'm looking around and the same people from 1976 are in that goddamn bar. You know, I'm like, "Really? Have you gone home and showered? I mean, come on." It was just, you know what? But the thing is, what really made me really, really sad was that would have been me. But actually, I probably would have been dead, because women don't get to be alcoholics as long as you men do. We just, our bodies just can't tolerate the alcohol. And we tend to get the cirrhosis a lot faster and get, you know, sicker a lot faster than the men. But so I know I wouldn't be alive if I was still. I would be a meth addict if meth had been around. I know how I am, and I would have liked that shit. I mean, so I'm just so grateful I got sober when I did, because honest to God, when I got sober, I couldn't get drunk. I drank myself sober. I couldn't get high. That's a terrible, terrible place to be when you hated yourself and you're in the throes of your addiction and you can't get high or drunk. That sucks. That's when I got sober, because that's what I thought, "Oh, this is bad." But anyway, I know I'm kind of flopping all over. I worked last night. And after, I'm getting old. These 12-hour shifts are starting to affect me. I'm tired, but it gets rough because all I hear is for 12 hours. Then you'll hear me, and that's why I kind of like my job, because I can say, "Sit your fucking ass down," and I won't get fired. I'm like, I love it. But you know, I don't have to do that very often either. But when I do throw that F-bomb out, those young kids think, "Look at that old lady saying the F-bomb." And then they respect me. Is that funny? You get respect for throwing the F-bomb out. Or they listen to me. I wouldn't say they respect me, but they do listen, because I think I shock them a little bit that I'm saying that. But, I, you know, like I said, I have a great job. I've worked in the field of addiction for like 20 years, and y'all wore me out. It was like, oh, my God. If I say, why my person come in here to detox and then say, I'm in treatment. I'm like, no, you're not. You're in detox. This isn't treatment. AA is treatment. But I did that for 20 years, and I do miss it. I truly miss it. But my job now, and people, are you worried? Are you scared? Mm-mm. The inmates are nice. They're nice. They're us. I'm them. The difference between them and me is they got caught. I got caught once, and I was in Cherokee County Jail, and then it's the craziest damn thing. Don't tell them, because I might want to go back up there and work again sometime. But I ended up getting a DUI, and I've had two tickets, a DUI, and then a little speeding ticket, like 40 years ago. But I went to Cherokee County Jail, and the officer, I think he really felt sorry for me, because my boyfriend at the time, you know, I picked up those skanks in the bar, you know, like, yeah, I'll pay your bills, come live with me. You know, that was my my drinking history at the end when I got divorced. But I think he felt sorry, because he was passed out in the back seat, and I had called a cab, and he wanted his car home. So I drove, but I wasn't there very long. And I do remember knocking at the thing and saying, excuse me, because my roommate or cellmate was a young girl, and I thought, oh, this poor child. And excuse me, she's cold. Can she have a blanket? And I just remember them saying, this is jail. And I think, oh, now I understand it. But back then, and then I went to work there. I don't know how that happened. But it was many, many years later, because my DUI was like, maybe 30 years ago. I'm not quite sure how long ago. I'm sure if I looked back at my background, it would tell me how many years ago. But I know it probably still shows up. I don't know about all that kind of stuff. But I really don't care at this point of my career, because my career is starting. I'm tired. Anyway, so getting back to how I got sober. I used to be a bar fly. That's where I drank. I would drink at home. I would get off of work. I would crack that, you know, vodka or wine, and I would drink from home, and I'd always had a drink every night. And at the first, it progresses, and that's what they tell us. But my drinking progressed too, because when I first got divorced, I would only drink maybe one night a week, and then I was two nights a week. And I remember thinking, wow, I'm drinking three nights a week now. I probably should think about this, but I never did, you know. And I really didn't even, when I walked into AA, I really wasn't even convinced I was an alcoholic. I thought I was just a pothead, and I thought, I'll quit smoking weed, and then I'll learn how to drink normal. Because I really, with how I drank, I thought everybody drank that way. I thought everybody drank to get drunk. Why in the hell would you drink that nasty tasting shit if you weren't wanting to get drunk? I mean, that's how I thought. And I smoked cigarettes too at that time. And the reason I smoked cigarettes, well, I liked them, but also I didn't like the taste of that alcohol. So I smoked cigarettes and I drank, you know, and that was what I did for, you know, a while anyway. So I'm a bar fly. There's a place I used to call JP's Oyster Bar down here on 92. And so I thought, I really felt like I had a lot of friends, but what happened was they didn't drink like me. So those friends kind of got pushed down. So my friends now became the people in the bars with no teeth, no job, no, and that was my friends. And I felt very, you know, the ego. I felt, oh, I've arrived. I got teeth. I got a job. I got a house, you know. And, you know, when you're drinking and you're not doing right, those kind of things matter, you know. But anyway, I remember being in that bar, and it was like a restaurant bar, you know. It became a bar after 10 o'clock, I guess, at night. But then on the board, it said my birthday. Oh, JP's Oyster Bar has acknowledged my birthday. Ah, you know, and so I really thought I was something special. But my special and my drinking really started like going downhill. And I remember my very last drunk, I was going out for only a few drinks, and I would, my MO, I'd go out like a, my kids would get home from school. My daughter was 14 when I got sober, and my son was 10. And they'd get home from school, I'd get their dinner done, and then I would go drink. And I'd be home in a little while, get your homework done, and watch your brother, and blah, 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 blah. And so I would go drink, but I would think I could be safe because I had a minivan. And who's going to pick up me at 7 o'clock at night for a DUI, right? Well, so my last night of drinking, I went to this little Mexican restaurant, and if I got really drunk, I walked across the street to this bar called Whispers. If you've been around Woodstock, oh, God, I know, look at him. But I have arrived. I go to Whispers. I got teeth. I got a job, you know, and it was like, oh, my God. So, and that's where I would go to, and it really depended on how drunk I got, you know. And so I ended up there, and from there I was, and I blackout drank, too. I was a blackout drinker. I didn't know not everybody was a blackout drinker. I just thought when you drank, you got drunk and you blacked out, you know. So I didn't think I was anything different than anybody else. So that was my last drunk. I don't remember much of anything. I don't know how I got home. I know my car didn't get home. I know that. I got home, and I remember my neighbor calling me up and told me I was a effing bitch and don't ever call her again. And so I don't know what I did. And so then I'm thinking, I'm real hysterical. And up to this point, I remember waking up every day sick. I vomited every morning because my stomach was so upset from all the alcohol. And I would wake up and I didn't want to live. I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to be. I did not want to be me. I did not want to be. I was really depressed and I really didn't know what was going on. And I knew I wouldn't hurt myself. However, I really didn't care if anything happened to me. You know, I mean, I was done. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what, I mean, I knew about AA and all that, but I didn't think I needed that. And I just thought it was everybody else's fault, you know, the deal. And it was his fault because he's a lousy boyfriend. And, you know, it's his fault and her fault and everybody's fault, but it wasn't my fault. And so I go and I get drunk and everybody's pissed off at me and I don't remember anything. And I remember feeling like, oh, my God, I felt so bad. So I remember dumping my weed into the commode. And I didn't throw away this. I made this homemade Kahlua, and I didn't throw that away. But I threw away that weed, and then I made this phone call to that. Marietta has this hotline for mental health. I called this number, and I'm crying, and I don't even know what the hell I said, to be honest with you. And they said, do you need to go to detox? And I'm like, no, I got to work tomorrow. What are you talking about, detox? And, you know, too, also, I didn't think I was not worthy. Nurses are really sick individuals. So if anybody tells you they're not, they are. Because we're very codependent. We're very take care of everybody else. And we don't take care of ourselves. We really just don't take care of ourselves. And that was me. I didn't think I needed help. Why would I need help when I'm helping the whole wide world, you know? It's like, so that was a hard concept for me to ask for help and to get help. But I talked to this lady. I told her I was not going to freaking detox. No, ma'am. And she said, well, I'll call you tomorrow. Well, the next day I woke up and I called out sick because, oh, God, I was so hungover. And I called out sick, and that hotline called me back. And I thought, holy cow. If they're calling me back, I really kind of thought maybe they were going to come pick me up and put me in a straitjacket. I, honest to God, did not know what the hell was going to happen now, because now they got my number, and now they know I have a drinking and a marijuana problem. So now what's going to happen to me? So they said something about coming up here, and I thought, okay, I'm going. I'll go up there. And so I had called up here, and I talked to some of us all know Ellen. Ellen's kind of one of the starting figures of this Breakfast Club meeting. And so I called up here, and she answered the phone. And so I talked to Ellen, and she said, yeah, come up. There's a 1 o'clock meeting. Come up to that 1 o'clock meeting. So I did, and I looked for Ellen. I didn't meet Ellen for, like, another good month. I thought Ellen was going to be sitting at a desk waiting for me, welcoming me to AA. I had no clue, and I remember sitting in the back, about where Susan's sitting, crying. I cried the whole damn meeting. Then they handed me something to read, and I'm like, I didn't realize I had to get up and read it out loud in front of people. I mean, I'm crying, Christ's sakes, you know. It was the promises, and I read them, and that's always meant so much to me. But I came to my first meeting, and I remember people telling me, keep coming back, you know, this and that and the other thing, and all those little sayings, and I thought, okay. But, you know, right before, I got to backtrack a little bit. Right before I got sober, I was a home health nurse, and I was driving this chick around, teaching her home health, and we were splitting my territory, and she just kept talking to me about AA, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Why is this girl talking to me about AA? Her husband was in AA, and I thought that I knew I had all the marijuana out of my car, because I used to have a lot of little butts in my car. I used to do a lot of trips to go buy milk and bread. My kids, I'm going to get milk, I'm going to get bread, and then I'd be out driving around the back roads of Cherokee County. Sorry if there's any cops in here. I don't do it anymore, but anyway. Driving around Cherokee County getting high, and then I go home, and I was the best mom, I thought, you know. Oh, yeah, we can do that, yeah. So anyway, she kept talking about AA, and I thought, why is she saying this stuff to me? You know, I don't understand. I know I don't reek of alcohol because I know I quit drinking about 10 o'clock last night, and I know there's no weed. So I don't know why this girl's talking to me. So anyway, that was it. She talked about her husband. That was it. So on Saturday night, I came to a speaker meeting, and her husband was the speaker, and there she was. And I'm like, if you remember Claude, I'm like, Claude, I know that girl. I did not want her to see me. And it was crazy because there was a lot of people in here that I knew from the bars, or I even was a basketball coach, believe this or not. And I was a little basketball coach at this time too. And one of the girls' dad was in here, and I thought, what are they doing? And then I think, oh, they're in here because just like me, you know, I was, you know, and I think, oh, I wasn't that bad. But when I look back at how crazy oh, my God, my mind was, like, muddled, you know. I didn't know about wet brain until I worked in the field. And it's a real thing. It's a real thing. It's like, oh, man. And it's sad because, you know, it could have been prevented, you know. And that's what people say, oh, it's hard to get sober. Oh, the hell it is. If I tell myself something's hard, it's hard. If I tell myself something is going to be okay, it's going to be okay. It's all about, you know, they say this disease centers in our mind. So that's about the only concept I caught on really fast, that it centers in my mind. So if I tell myself, you're not going to get drunk, you're going to be a white chip wonder, or I'm going to do this, or I'm never going to drink again. They said, well, never say that. Well, you know what? I did. So, I mean, but I'm still rebellious, you know. If you tell me not to do it, I'll probably do it anyway. But it's not some stuff I won't, but I'm still a little bit. I work on my character defects now and again. I need to. But I just had to, you know, tell myself I'm not going to drink again. But I didn't know you could. This is another reason why I'm so glad I was so sick. I did not know. I thought once you said, I'm an alcoholic, I couldn't drink again. Because I said I was an alcoholic, and you AAers are going to come get me at Whispers. And I knew it. So, I mean, I really did not understand. I thought, once you surrendered to this, that's it. But that's all I saw. Thank God, that's all I saw. I mean, my ex-sister-in-laws are probably 45, 40 years sober, you know, and, you know, so I've seen this, and that's what I thought you did until I came around here. And I was like, you what? You relapsed? I didn't know you could do that. Oh, you know. So, okay. And it used to really piss me off, too. It used to piss me off because it scared me, you know. And for me, I don't like to be vulnerable, so I get pissy. Instead of being hurt or sad, I will get pissed off. And it used to really piss me off when people would do that because I didn't want them to die. I had this little book with phone numbers in it, and I'm telling you, there was probably 50 or 60 names and numbers in that book. In less than a year, probably 5 to 10 people were coming around to meetings. And that was early on. it devastated me to see, you know, the people come in and go out, come in and go out, and then never come back, you know. And for me, honestly, my first 10 years was really pretty easy to stay sober because I was ready for it, you know. And that's the only reason why I was ready, and it was easy. And I worked my steps, and I got a sponsor, and I did what I was supposed to do. I was at meetings all the damn time. I was at meetings all, I mean, I became addicted to AA, and which my sponsor said, don't ever say that again. Just go to a meeting and shut up. And I'm like, okay. But I did. I came all the time. I worked weekends, so I was fortunate that I could come, you know, at the 8 o'clock, and then I'd go home and do what I had to do, and then at the 1 o'clock. And so I had a lot of meetings, and so I had to learn, I learned fast about, you know, for me, they don't teach you alcoholism in nursing school. I mean, I knew about like DTs and, you know, things like that, but I didn't know, you know, and they don't know. Doctors don't know. Oh, let me give you a little Xanax. You know, are you kidding me? You're like giving an addict something addictive, you know. Even the psychiatrists don't know, like, unless they are, you don't know about alcoholism unless you're an alcoholic and in recovery. You just don't know. I mean, they can say they know, but they just, you know, I don't think they know like we do, you know. And I learned about alcoholism in here, not in my nursing books or not anywhere, not at Northside Hospital. I worked there forever and a day. I would have a lot of alcoholics, you know, they forgot to say they drank every day, and then they were in the hospital for a GI whatever, and then all of a sudden they're like flipping out and all confused, and it's like, oh, Mom must have a drinking problem, you know. And I mean, that's horrible. What a horrible way to find out, you know. But that's what I knew about alcoholism. So I come in here, you all teach me, you love me, you tell me what to do. And for once, I do what I'm supposed to do. And I really didn't think I was going to do this for very long. I kind of figured I would just get off the marijuana and not want that anymore. And then I would learn to drink like a normal person. And the more I sat around here, the more I really argued with myself a lot, too. Am I really an alcoholic? I really argued with that in my head. And I had a friend say, Sue, normal people don't wonder if they're alcoholics or not. And I went, oh, okay, you know. So, you know, then I would hear all these little things I'd hear, and I remembered to this day, don't forget your first drunk. Because if you do, you'll get drunk again. And I don't know what happened to my first drunk because I was blacked out, but I remember the feelings. And, you know, to this day, when I think about that inside shit that I felt, I still get, like, a heaviness in my chest. And I still can feel that, oh, that feeling just so, you know, bad. And like I said, I didn't want to kill myself, but I'll tell you what, you know, I felt bad enough to want to die. I didn't want to live like that. I didn't want to feel like that. When people come into, like, when I worked mental health, I felt it. I knew it. I understood it, you know, because I was there once just feeling that, oh, that desperation. So when I got here, I won't tell you what all the three M's are, but I was told meetings, meditation, and something else. And I'm not going to say it because I'm on. But basically, I couldn't date people, you know, the first year. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to say it. These 13-steppers, I used to get so pissed off. It was like, leave them alone. Let them get sober. Let them learn their program. Let them figure out who they are. Because, you know, that's what you're... Anyway, that's what... I follow some rules. But anyway, so I was told, no dating. Work on you. And for a lot of times, and I think not just for women, but I think for men too, we have to make ourselves feel good. And because we don't feel good about ourselves, if you have a significant other, you know, you got that, and that makes you feel good. So I was addicted to relationships. I was addicted to anything that made me feel better, men, relationships, clothes, you know, whatever made me feel better. And that's what I went after. So I was told no. And, ooh, I said, okay, but I didn't, which shocked me again. There was a couple things that I really did that I was shocked about. So I guess I was probably 1 year, 2 months sober, and I was not long. So I met Mr. Wright in here. No, he wasn't. He was not. And that was the other thing. I thought if you came into AA, you were going to be a good person trying to be good and trying to be honest and trying to work a program. I really did. I was so naive. Well, anyway, it didn't work out. I didn't drink, but I came very close to drinking over that failed marriage. I was probably one of the most horrific things I've ever been through. And I went through it sober. That's probably why it was so horrific, you know. But that's when I had to really, like, really work my program. I really, really had to work my program. I had to, because I was in a big-time emotional relapse. And I would, you know how when you're, and you talk about the same thing, and he did this, and he did this. And my sponsor knew what he did because I'd already told her 7,000 times what he did. I'd call her up, and he did this. Well, I know that, Sue. But so she finally got mad at me and said, "You're blocking the sunlight of the spirit. Stop it." And that was, it was like, oh. And after I started, like, every time I thought about him and her, I would, there was a little prayer in here. I can't remember what page it's on. It's like 76 or something like that. But I wrote it down because Mike Mimone told me to, and I would read it every time I would think about them, and it was really talking about how they are sick people, and I have to pray for them, and all that kind of stuff. But I did. Every time I would think about them, I would pull that thing out of my purse. I'd be at a stoplight, and I would read that. And it really helped me to get through that anger and that devastation and that feeling of, you know. And, you know, to this day, I've found out anything. And then the other thing was that when I'd read stuff in this program, like, resentments will get you drunk. Oh, come on. So for like the first, a lot of the stuff in the book I really didn't believe because it didn't happen to me. But boy, I'll tell you what, after that happened and the shit hit the fan and I had to really like do life stuff without drinking or getting stoned, this book, everything in this book, I started to believe. And I always bring my big book into every meeting, not just because, you know, I think, and it's fallen apart, but this is because my sponsor told me to. She said, "This is your study guide. This is what AA is about. It's not about what you think, Sue. It's about what's in here." And so I still say what I think, but I still try to stay in the book too, because as much as I didn't understand it when I came in, I mean, these words were like, and I thought I was pretty, I read a lot, but when you're reading, it was like for me, like, and I'm, sorry, but the Bible. I'm Catholic. I said, "Catholics don't read the Bible. Are you kidding me?" I mean, I don't get the these and the thous and that. You know, that's hard for me to understand. So it took me a lot of big book meetings. And, that's how I learned. I go to big book studies. I go to meetings, make, you know, and working with others. Everything you told me to do, work with others, pray, go to meetings. And, you know, the damnedest thing is, I thought about this once. I've never had a commitment that I kept, like marriages, and I kept my kids, you know. I thought about selling them once. I was really broke, and I teased them. They're 40 and 35, so they can laugh about this now. But I said, you know, one time I was so broke, I thought about selling you and Brian, you know, you can go work at somebody's house for a bag of pot. You know, it's like my daughter was like, "Oh, thank God my children that I know of did not turn out like me or their father." Thank you, Jesus. Because I'd have up two hot messes on my hands right now. But, you know, thank God it kind of maybe skipped a generation. Now I look at my grandkids and I think, oh, hell no. I've already warned them. If you come to Cobb County Jail, I do not care. I'm pulling your pants down in intake and you're getting spanked in front of everybody. I have put the fear of God into my grandkids because they know I'll do it. But anyway. So being sober, you know, when I want to think it's going to be hard, I think about how hard it is to get drunk, to find weed, because weed is my story too. To get drunk, to find that weed, I didn't know how to roll it either. I had to learn how to do all that stuff too, you know. I was like, ah. But the hangovers, the guilt, the who are you and where's my car moments in the morning, it's like, you know, I mean, it was just all these things, and I felt so, oh my God, physically and mentally and emotionally, how bad you feel. That's hard. Coming to a meeting, calling somebody up, you know, that's easy. Now, there's times, do I think about drinking? Not like I want to get drunk, but there's times where, like, I'm like stressed out yesterday at work, and I think, God, somebody said, go home and have a beer soon. I thought, I made a comment. I said, if I went home and had a beer, which I wouldn't, I don't like beer. I wouldn't drink beer. But I'd be back in Cobb County Jail. I'd be here. I'd be an inmate because I'm crazy when I drink. I think I'm in. I can drive. I can do this. I can do everything. You know, I'm a crazy woman when I'm drinking, and I don't want to be that way. I'm already crazy enough. I don't need to add anything on top of that. So, this has become just a wonderful way of life. And I know you're going to hear that. And I remember hearing, "Oh, I'm grateful to be an alcoholic." And I thought, man, they are crazy as hell. Who is grateful for this disease? But now I understand that, because I am grateful, because now I know what was wrong with me. Even as a little kid, I had a lot of friends, but I always felt lonely. I never felt good enough. I always wanted to be somebody else because I didn't like me. And all these things that are inside me, and I know that that's all part of the isms of alcoholism, and you just add the alcohol on top of that, and whoa. But I know that, you know, and I know I was born this way, and you know, I would never blame, I know my grandparents, I think, were alcoholics, but you know, I don't know. But to me, it really doesn't matter, because I'm the alcoholic. I'm the one with the problem. If you want to have a glass of beer in front of me, it doesn't bother me, you know, because I'm the one with the problem. I try to be, like, real respectful for, like, my family. They're all like, "Do you care if we have a glass of wine?" I'm like, no. I enjoy watching them have a glass of wine, because I'm like, whoa, I didn't know that even existed in this world, but it does. So, but anyway, I'm just grateful, and you know, this is really the Breakfast Club was like my favorite, all-time favorite meeting. But I just, when I wake up, I can get up, I can wake up, but it's getting out of bed. So you probably won't see much of me over here, because I just don't like to get out of bed when I'm off, because I have to be at work so early in the morning. But if you're struggling, just grab somebody and talk to them, because I was told you're as sick as your secrets. And I know when I'm feeling like shit and I want to do something I know I shouldn't do, if I just tell somebody, it really takes a lot of that out of it, you know, that power out of those thoughts, you know. And I just have to remember, it's only thoughts, you know. I mean, if I got drunk today because something happened, then what am I going to be doing tomorrow? I'm going to be getting drunk again, and it didn't help what just happened. So I just have to go one day, and I used to say that all the time. If I want to tomorrow, I'll get drunk. But I'm not going to do it today. I might do it tomorrow. And I used to do that coming to a meeting. I would pull out of my subdivision. If I went right, I tell myself I'm going to get drunk, because that was going into Roswell. If I went left, I'm going to a meeting. And so far, I've gone left every time, and I've just waited till tomorrow to get drunk, and I haven't gotten drunk yet. So anyway, thank you. Thanks for asking me, Adam.